So, Brian, I completed the Ozaki 8 last week, and I gotta tell you, it was extremely disappointing. I just can't see why it was even a thing.
Well, maybe it just wasn't meant to be done. You should have probably left it alone.
Yeah, that sounds pretty logical. I think you're right. So, what are we gonna do this week?
Oh, this week is going to be awesome. We are doing Point Break.
No. Not again. I refuse to talk about that piece of shit.
No. We're doing the 1991 Point Break. Because, why not? It's going to be great. Trust me. This is going to be awesome. Grab your surfboard and your popcorn. Welcome to Grab Your Popcorn. I am your host, Brian Kroc. This is Point Break, the non-sequel episode. And of course, along with me is David Kalisa.
Hey, hello again, everybody.
Now, David, we have in studio a special guest, so why don't you introduce said special guest?
Yes, alongside me, I have my good friend, Brian Amos. I invited him along because this movie is actually a pretty big Rosetta Stone for our friendship, if you were.
Well, I'm glad to be here. This movie definitely has some significance for me and Dave, especially being a 90s action movie, which is pretty much, you know, the golden era of action movies. So happy to be here and give you guys some thoughts on it.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So what do we want to hop into first?
All right, so here's the deal. After last week's fiasco of of watching the remake of Point Break, which is honestly one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
And our first zero rating.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's so bad. Like, there's really just not anything redeemable about it. So bad that it's good.
He gave it a 2. I gave it a -2. So it averaged out to
a 0, yes.
So I'm going to get killed on the inside jokes here because the podcast isn't up yet. So.
Oh, well, you know. Yeah. We'll get around to do that.
It'll be up by the time this shows up.
Yeah.
But
people will have heard it.
I made the same regrettable mistake as you guys are watching the movies.
Yes, exactly. That was the problem.
The regrettable thing is that you guys probably had to watch it twice.
No, I watched it once and sparingly at that. I skipped through basically anything that wasn't, like, plot, really.
It was...
Because I knew the action sequences were going to be okay. Because, I mean, they're extreme sportsing. But,
Because reasons.
Yeah, because reasons.
At some point.
If you want to know, that's the inside joke from the last episode.
That's the inside
joke. They had to do this because reasons. So
they had to have something for the trailer that would make you think authenticity of the original one. Yes.
So after watching that, we then suggested, it's like, hey, we should actually do the original Point Break right after that one, since it's like, let's go from such a crappy movie to like a good campy movie, just for comparison's sake.
Well, and it's also, you know, a good thing for people to realize that, you know, especially in this day and age when remakes and reboots are like a big Hollywood thing.
Yes.
You know, it's a good idea to view said original and new one.
Yes.
You know, just for point of reference, and you also kind of expand your movie knowledge and whatnot.
Yeah, that's why for the next 4 weeks, we're just going to be doing versions of A Star Is Born.
That's like a month worth of episodes right there, isn't
exactly.
It?
Because there's four different movies of A Star Is Born, and everybody's like, hey, did you see that one with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper? It's so amazing. Be like, yeah, I also enjoyed it the first 3 times I saw that movie.
Yeah.
God, people, grow up.
As long as nobody brings a guitar, the review should go okay.
Just saying. It's like, it's so goofy. So, yes, we are doing Point Break, the original 1991 film starring Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze.
An unlikely pairing, but ultimately superb.
Yes. I will honestly say Swayze carries this movie, but...
I believe that was the anticipation.
That was the anticipation.
You got Keanu Reeves, the guy who's kind of unproven, and then, you know, we'll get Swayze to carry it.
Yeah, I think it was like a co-carry between Swayze and Busey. Let's be honest here.
Yeah, well, definitely Busey. So, but I mean, we kind of have to just start things off. Let's go through the plot points, as well as we will then be able to compare them to the other crap fest that the other Point Break was.
I told you at the beginning of this episode, I'm not talking about that piece of shit.
So I will, though, because I see what they did to, like, make the new one, and I saw the exact plot points that they were like, oh, yeah, we can totally use that. And then they transferred them over.
Yeah, they watched a 2-minute compilation reel on YouTube. Like, okay, we understand what the movie is, and then that's what they made.
They could have watched the trailer, possibly.
That's exactly what I was going to say. They watched the trailer. It was the trailer that they watched.
But so let's start this sucker off, right?
Okay.
So we have Johnny Utah. Apparently, though, some of the other points they thought about naming the character were like other state names, too. Like, I think Texas.
Johnny Texas?
Yeah.
Wow.
They just go through all 50, like, okay, which one sounds the coolest?
There were a couple of ones, but apparently one of the suggested names was actually North Dakota.
Okay, apparently.
I'm not even going to respond to that.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know how. I don't know why, but apparently that was the thing.
Wasn't you telling me earlier today, Brian, that that they were going to name the movie Johnny Utah?
Yeah, it was the original title was Johnny Utah.
Apparently it was also supposed to be about skateboarding the first time around.
Oh man.
They rolled the second title was rolled Riders of the Storm, I think.
Riders on the Storm.
Oh God, please stop.
Like, wow.
We have Johnny Utah, who is a young buck. Blue flame special. I don't know what that means. They say it twice.
They say
blue flame special, and then he calls him a blue flamer later on.
That's got to be some sort of L.A. California.
It's got to be an FBI thing. It's got to be an FBI thing.
I would go probably FBI thing,
because he came from Quantico, which is in Virginia.
Yeah.
So and he's originally from the Midwest.
That's a blue flame Quantico cat, I think is what Pappas calls him.
Yeah.
Some quarterback punk.
Yeah, because Pappas calls him a blue flamer, but yeah, I don't know what the reference is, and I didn't bother to look it up, but I could later on. If you know, please contact us on all of our social media sites and let us know, and be like, hey, you idiots, it means this, blah 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 blah.
So we have him going through a nice little montage in the beginning of
the best training sequence ever.
The best repetitive training sequence ever.
The look on his face when he cocks that shotgun is so priceless. It's like the one eyebrow cocked up and it's raining. Why is it what all? It's like anytime there's emotions, it's like raining for some reason.
Well, and it's kind of funny that the beginning and the end of the movie ended rain.
Yes, that is true.
I think that was on purpose.
But it's Utah going through his final Quantico training, which apparently is a multi-gun course of shooting bad guys and that.
And chewing bubble gum.
And chewing bubble gum, which is really hilarious because it's like very deliberate how he puts the gum into his mouth.
I think it was paying homage to They Live.
Yes. And then he finally passes. And he gets sent off to L.A., the bank-robbing capital of the world.
Up 26% from the year before.
With Officer Angry McGinley. So that's where he meets his boss, who then calls him the Blue Flame Special, and then says the great line. He's like, you're young, dumb, and full of cum. It's like, okay. It's like,
because that was necessary.
I mean, I don't get, like, the amount of semen that he has anything to do with the bearing on his, I don't know.
I mean, let's not go into the reasoning as, like, why he would know exactly how much.
I'm just saying. But it actually does crack me up when he's like, I take the skin off chicken, sir.
And then.
He's like, good one.
And then grabs a donut.
Proceeds to eat the donut, yeah.
I love these things.
So he then, after introduction to his asshole of a boss, gets introduced to his partner.
Pappas.
Also an asshole.
Played by legendary Busey. But he's a good asshole. He's a funny asshole.
He's at least the kind that's like, I love the exposition, though, because it's like, how do we introduce this character and like talk about what he's been through? Let's blindfold him and have him just rant to him. It's like, I thought actually it was a clever little way to put in exposition without actually being like, you know, him yelling at somebody doing it.
Yeah.
It's like, I've been on the force for 26 years and 22, it was 22, right?
22 years.
22 years.
Fired my piece over 19 times in duty, and I just don't see what retrieving bricks from the bottom of a pool has to do with being a special agent.
It's a very Busey-like intro, for
yes,
sure.
Yes.
Even the jump in the pool is, you know.
Oh, that's classic.
Wounded dolphin or something.
Wounded dolphin.
But the two characters meet each other, and it's a little funny moment, obviously. And then they proceed to get handed a case that Pappas has been working on for a while that involves the ex-presidents.
The bank robbers of L.A., 26 jobs in 3 years.
And as Pappas says, this is the best I've ever seen. The best. That it's like they bust on in. They take stuff from the cash drawers. They never go to the vault. They control the room. They are professionals. They know exactly what they're doing. And then, as Pappas states, they vanish.
They are
like a virgin on prom
90
night.
Seconds, yeah. And they are ghosts.
Gone. They rob another bank.
Yep.
And they're investigating and everything. And basically it all boils down to Keanu, a.k.a. Utah, trying to get Pappas to tell him his theory on what he thinks is going on here. And he explains to him his great theory in one of the craziest after hours eating at the office
parties ever.
Because what was it? They're eating Chinese food.
They have Chinese food. They have Corona beer, and watching it today, Brian and he noticed the fucking Pappas pulls out just a straight bottle of Jack from out of nowhere,
just right out of the corner. That's like they just sneak it in there, you know. And knowing Busey, I wouldn't doubt that he actually takes a swig out of it.
It's that method acting, you know?
I mean, you can't explain how else he jumps on the desk without taking a step on anything.
I honestly think...
Busey's probably, what, like 50s in this movie?
Oh,
somewhere
yeah.
In there?
Yeah, for late 40s, yeah. Early 50s.
Either way.
I think it would have been a great deleted scene if they would have been called into the boss's office. You'd be like, what the fuck were you two doing here with this? And it plays the footage of them jumping up on the desk and surfing and shit.
I was
explaining to him my theory. How else did you want me to do it?
Either one of you care to explain this?
If they were to just walk in and like the whole department just huddled around the desk watching it. We got security footage of the bank robbers and then they all part ways and it's Busey jumping on the desk. That would be priceless.
So Pappas explains his theory. He's like that the robbers, the ex-presidents, are surfers.
So
due to actual police work that he puts on, which is he discovers like that there was some wax on the bottom of a shoe.
Sex wax,
which, you know, surfers put on their board for traction. Because they couldn't just have a board with traction in the first place.
Because reasons.
But so they put it on. They put it on the board for traction, and then the suntan on the one dude who moons the camera.
Yep.
And what was some of the other? There were a couple of other.
They're only robbing in the summer months.
Yeah, only robbing in the summer months.
Like
a
summer job.
So he has some valid points, and thus starts the investigation.
Which means that young Utah has to go learn how to surf because he's got to integrate himself into the culture.
Yep.
And not just like show up as he says, you know, it's like, why can't I just carry this around, act stoned and ask questions? It's like, no, you gotta like integrate yourself into the culture to figure it out because they're a tribe.
Yes.
And that's exactly what it was. So he then goes out, buys himself a board, meets a very young kid selling the board who actually gives some, like, weirdly enough, some of the better lines, like, of acting in the movie.
He's got some deep advice for a young kid.
It's like, surfing's the source. It'll change your life, man.
Swear to God.
Now, you want to go ahead and tell him your interesting fact about that
kid?
Yeah,
one of the interesting facts is that he's kind of poking at Utah for starting surfing at 25. And the kid in the movie that plays it is actually a surfer, and he doesn't actually make it to 25 in real life.
Oh yeah,
kind of a sad point, but I mean, you know, hindsight 2020 kind of thing.
Interesting.
And Reeves actually in the film, I think, is 26. His character is 25, but he is 26.
So gotcha. Yeah, that was some just creepy foreshadowing that happened in the film without, you know, anybody knowing it.
Yeah. So he goes out there and tries to surf because he was told, hey, it's like any other athletic thing, you're
just
fine.
Just balance.
Just go for it.
Yeah. How hard could it be?
Goes for it, nearly drowns, and gets rescued by Tyler. Now, I know what you're thinking. Tyler, that's a guy.
Tyler
no,
Durden?
Tyler is not a guy. Tyler is Lori Petty, a.k.a. Tank Girl, if
Thank
you didn't
God.
Know. But she was one of these, she shows up, rescues him, immediately like gets pissed off at him. And then it leads to actually one of the lines that I cracked up the most at. It's like, "Hey, my name's Johnny Utah.
Who cares?"
It's just the fact that he felt the need to yell it back at her. It's like, that just cracks me up. And then leads to one of the weirdest and like most pretty much psychotic moments, I think, of the entire movie. He goes and he checks her out in the FBI database, gets information on her, and he's like, "But what's my in?" It's like, "How do I get in like with this girl, blah, 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 so she'll teach me how to surf, because there aren't like 10 billion other people out there who can freaking teach him how to surf. He needs this girl to teach him how to surf." So figures out her parents died in a plane crash in 1984. Aha, this is my in.
Instantly.
Proceeds to go and like meet with her. And then gives her this sad story explaining about how, like, how his parents died in a car wreck. And then says, like, he's like, "You know, you can't understand it. It's like, but your whole world changes." And it's just like, my God, you are a dick for doing this.
That's actually, you know what, now that he puts that, that's a pretty big mind fuck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was like, this is horrible. Like, I understand, like, you know, you can go forward and, like, you know, later on when she finds out the whole deal, I was like, if I were, I just would have freaking shot him. Like, I mean, because that was like using all of that emotion to like integrate yourself. Man, that was just brutal looking.
Yeah, that was.
That's harsh.
So we now have a nice little love interest, and we now have an end for him to.
Well, I would like to go back for one quick thing, though. Like, before he does the whole research thing, and he actually like tricks her into teaching him and stuff like that. Him watching her get changed, though, is actually one of the other creepy scenes, because it is really, really focused on her changing her clothes.
He wasn't focused on that. He was waiting for the license plate to come up.
I understand that. I'm talking about like just like the director, like, you know, being like, "No, we're just gonna spend like a solid minute and a half of watching her change under a towel."
I feel like that's a lot of like the 90s style action movies have a much more serious, and this is more of a creepy tone, but they have a much more of like a serious tone to them.
I can understand
that. We also have to remember, times have changed. We look at things a lot differently now.
That we do. So at the time, I was just like, man, that is like a really, really long time.
Voyeurism was an in thing in the 90s. It's not now. You know, it's frowned upon.
Yeah.
Like masturbation on an airplane.
Yes.
Of course.
My Uncle Walter was on a plane one time. No, I'm kidding.
you better be kidding.
Let me guess, he flies Delta. I'll leave that there.
All of a sudden, hydraulics kick out. So he thinks, it's like, never mind, I'm not going into the full mall rats.
Oh, man. So
we'll do that movie later.
Yes. So he has his in. He starts learning to surf with her and whatnot. And
yes.
Another little 90s montage, of course, with.
We need a montage.
Yes, you know, awesome filler, and, you know, he's looking ridiculous. And enter said other main character.
Antagonist / bro.
Bra.
Bra. Bro, Bodhi. I said Brody. Because Brody's a real name. It's like you don't meet many people named Bodhi.
The Bodhisattva.
Although, or Bodhisattva.
Which I didn't even know was a real name until just recently. You watch the movie
like,
and you
that's
think
Bodhi.
That's,
they yeah. call him the Bodhisattva, which means a person who could attain nirvana, but has chosen not to to help other people. Which kinda, doesn't do, but okay.
I don't know if I would say he doesn't. He kind of helps Johnny find a more spiritual side in the movie. Obviously, you know, given the ending, and
he
things,
does
because you know?
he's the one that gets him out and, you know, into the night and everything.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
I mean, he has a very very weird way of doing it, yes. but he does. I think in some ways, you know, especially at the end, he's, you know, you're still surfing every day, you know, kind of thing.
So. Yeah.
So now Patrick and Keanu have met. And it's a nice bromance going on. And Utah and Pappas are still trying to figure out who the ex-presidents are. They're still doing their investigation and everything. And things are starting to get a little tricky.
You know, I just had a thought. I don't mean to interrupt.
You're good.
So the person that can achieve nirvana but chooses not to, And then I'm thinking, like, later in the movie, you know, when they have the chance to, you know, to go, and he's like, you know, let's just go, we'll get out of here tonight, you know, and Bodhi doesn't do it, you know?
Yeah.
And then he chooses, again, to bring Utah back into the fold, kind of, maybe something there.
Yeah. And so, like, a couple of points, and we're going to kind of jump around just a little bit here. So after meeting Bodhi and, like, his crew and stuff like that, and Bodhi recognizes him as the football player that he used to be for the Buckeyes and all of that, Utah goes out and he tries to, like, surf around and do some other stuff, ends up meeting this other sort of small gang of people, and they're excessively violent and all of that. And that leads them down another path of trying to hunt those dudes down because they're, you know, prime suspects at that point. But the conversation that Bodhi has with him after he helps him out in the fight, he's talking about, you know, those guys, they're just the adrenaline junkies. They don't get the spiritual side of it and blah, 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 blah. This right here was the key point that I recognized as to where the writers of the new Point Break got it entirely wrong.
Go for it. Enlighten me.
Enlighten you. So here's how this went. They watched the movie. I can guarantee you they watched the movie.
For those of you can't see, I am shaking my head no very vigorously because no, the fuck they did not.
So what they did, though, is they saw the thing, the Bodhisattva. They took that very seriously. And then on top of that, when he's going through his thing, they're like, they don't get it, man. They're just the adrenaline junkies. They don't get the spiritual side of it. And they're just like, yeah. We don't get the spiritual side of it. Let's make the movie entirely about that. And so that's when they came up with the Ozaki 8, and that's when they came up with, like, the whole plan to, like, achieve Nirvana and blah, 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 blah. It was that line right there that I guarantee was just like, that's how we make this movie different.
And they should have slapped that person right in the head and gone, yep. Nope.
It's like that one meme. They're like, how about we make a movie that's actually just about surfing bank robbers? No! And then chuck them out the window. I'm just saying. Man. Quit knocking stuff over!
Don't tell me what to do.
God dang it. After this whole... There's a bit of here that, like, there's a lot of exposition. There's talking and stuff like that. There's, philosophy talk and stuff like that. And the bromance continues. He gets into the fight with that other gang of surfers. Bodhi helps him out, like, comes in. Patrick Swayze freaking kicking butt, taking names. That's when you can actually see that he actually, you know, kind of knew some maneuvers that, of course, Keanu Reeves did not know. As we all know, Keanu Reeves is much, much better with guns than he is with kung fu.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he knows kung fu.
It was very, very Roadhouse from Swayze.
Now, if Swayze had been Neo, would have been a much different film. And arguably, I would say better.
Yeah, one of the things I was reading, too, on this is that Keanu Reeves actually has, like, three special coaches for this movie. He's got a surfing coach, a football coach, and a FBI coach, you know.
Makes sense.
Now to help him, and he's, you know, apparently at this stage of his career, terrible at all three.
Do you ever wonder if the actual FBI coach was, like, a real FBI guy? Or was just like, no, this is how FBI guys are.
like he fibbed his resume just to get in on this.
Yes.
Like, I'm just totally going to screw
right.
over these
oh,
guys.
Man.
All right. Remember, FBI agents only rack their shotgun one-handed.
In the rain.
FBI agents only drink Corona, too.
He probably taught them the look. That's where the look comes from. That's a real FBI thing, like.
Which is why, like, you know, Keanu's just like later on, you know, like, hey, let's call him Jim. It's like, hey, Jim, how would an FBI agent, like, state that he's an FBI agent? And that's where he's like, I am an FBI agent.
I know, man. Ain't it wild?
That's how the FBI would announce it. They would enunciate every letter they could.
It's like they didn't believe he was going to pull off this role. Like, they start the movie with that whole montage. Like, we got to sell Keanu right from the start. Like everybody's going to believe Swayze, but we got to get this guy right.
Yes. Yes, very much.
One-handed shotgun, everybody buys into that.
Yes.
So,
here's the thing that I also love about all of this, though, is the fact that the entire time that, like, this is going on, Pappas is basically just sitting in a car, not really doing anything.
he's totally, observing.
Totally,
you know,
conspicuously, though. He's hanging out the window with with binoculars. Like, not even trying
and
to.
And
like,
not even, like, small binoculars.
No,
like, they're
no,
giant, like, no. bird-watching binoculars.
Yes. It was like, I got to see 4 miles down the beach to make sure that Johnny's not just, like, what is your out cover? There. You're watching guys surf? I mean, there's... It's kind of hard to explain.
Why are you sitting here with binoculars looking at these guys all the time?
But, like, today that definitely doesn't work today. Yeah. You cannot be a guy at the beach in an old, Caprice or whatever it is, hanging out the window. Like, you cannot do that today. You will be all over everything.
All right. So back to the plot. This whole bit, with the other gang, like, leads to a raid that happens, and
really violent raid,
very very violent raid
with lots of death and boobies and stabbing and lawnmowers.
And this is kind of where the whole his rookie side comes out. You know, he's you know, obviously he's out with Tyler.
Yes,
he's sleeping on the beach. You getting his own nirvana, and ends up being late to his own raid.
Yes, which, why was he even involved in this raid in the first place? Like, he's undercover. Like,
right? Like, I guess because I thought this was it. This was the end.
What the FBI does. Said the FBI coordinator.
Like, no, we don't. Like, how does the FBI handle, like, maintaining cover? We don't worry about it. We just assume that everybody's not going to know.
Yeah, because we're the FBI.
We're the FBI. And of course, we're also going to send out famous college player football stars to become undercover
agents.
It's
like that in a lot of movies. You see these guys, you know, like, when they're getting ready to go into any building, the team is fully tacked up. They got the face covered and all that stuff.
And
whoever the head agent is always just, like, in that FBI coat with a hat, like, let's go.
Because Hollywood, they just have a crate of those laying around. And anybody that plays FBI, you automatically get a jacket.
Yes.
Like, that's their main problem. Like, that's how you know what you're going to play in the movie. You get the FBI pullover.
Definitely.
So, the raid.
Oh, I did want to say, one of the gang members of this gang is also the lead singer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
No.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, look at that.
You didn't recognize him?
No, I did.
I was going to say, I was like, I took one look at it and was like, that's the lead singer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Obviously, it's from the 90s. You know, it's like, he looks very different now. But still, yeah.
That's about who you know.
It's one of those things I can always spot, like, a member of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which just cracks me up. It's like, because they show up in so many random movies, it's kind of ridiculous.
But it's also kind of cool. You know, it'd be neat if, you know, I think more artists and stuff did that, you know, kind of branch out and kind of
do those small little cameos.
Like,
my favorite one, the first one I ever actually paid attention to them, though, was in the movie The Chase, starring Charlie Sheen. Yeah.
Who appeared in that?
Charlie Sheen.
So it had a bunch of people. It had Charlie Sheen. It also had Henry Rollins as a police officer, and he's hilarious.
Henry Rollins is a good actor.
And then on top of that, there's a small part that is played by Anthony and Flea of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. They're in a monster truck together.
For those of you still listening, we are still doing Point Break. We have just derailed a little bit.
We just went on a little side note there about the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That's perfectly fine. I'm sure people...
We'll just blame it on the guest commentator.
People don't really care about
that. Just derailed the whole show.
I am kind of lost on the plot. Where were we at?
We're at the raid.
The great raid.
Yes. The great raid. The excessively violent and bloody raid that leads to a lot of death.
Yes. Two of the members of the little gang get killed. Two of them get captured. And then, and we're going to introduce Tom Sizemore, just because.
Yeah.
Because he's awesome.
You think I like my hair like this? Working on this case for 3 months, man.
And, of course, Pap is being the a-hole that he is. He goes, nice tattoo, Deets. Oh, yeah, you like that? F you. So you find out that it actually is not these guys, because there was an undercover cop with them as well. And they just blew undercover work.
Like, how did they rob this place when they weren't even in the state or something? I forgot what he says.
It kind of establishes the trust, too, between Keanu Reeves and Pappas, or Utah and Pappas, I guess. You know, at the end, of course, this whole thing goes horribly wrong for Utah.
Very, very wrong.
You know, he's wrong about them, and the undercover agent. He gets whooped by a girl in the movie and the scene. And then he goes out and he almost sees face first with the lawnmower and almost eats it. But Pappas comes to his rescue. So it's kind of that moment where I think he kind of gets his real trust with Pappas too.
Pappas says a line there, and I'm totally blanking on what it was. But it's like one of the best insults I think I've heard in a 90s movie. Ah, geez.
Is that you look like hammered shit? Is that it? Or is that later in the movie?
No, that's later in the movie. That's after the chase.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember, but it's a funny line. So, okay, but yeah, they go through the raid, and it's just complete and total crap. But it turns out that these aren't the guys that they were looking for, and it just has to move on from there.
Right. So, cut to another little montage scene again.
Montage.
And we got Utah going to the beach with his, what we now assume, probably girlfriend.
Yeah.
Tyler. And they're going to go surf with Bodie.
The chick he's hooking up with.
Yep, with Bodie and his friends. And he starts piecing it together from the beach.
Dun, dun,
carrying,
dun.
Carrying the same surfboard that he got broken in the fight with Warchild.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big continuity error. Yeah.
That, oh, I didn't know that.
That, yeah. That fight scene, the Warchild breaks that board in half, the shower. He's carrying that same board in one piece on the beach in that scene. Yeah.
Well, we assume it's one piece. It looks like one piece.
Well, he's definitely not surfing with half a board.
It would have been more hilarious if, like, it was just, if for continuity's sake, it was just like duct taped back together.
Oh yeah.
So, are you sure this guy's a surfer?
So we are given the montage now that he kind of pieces together that from afar they look like a tight unit because they're all surfing the same wave. One of them pulls his pants down and moons him, like in the surveillance footage earlier in the film.
Yeah,
and he's just kind of puzzle piece in it, and of course he ends up leaving, goes and meets up with Pappas after doing some surveillance work.
Yep.
And comes to conclude that it has to be them
and that they are probably going to rob a particular bank,
right? Because that was part of his surveillance work. He followed him to there, they did da-da-da things, and then after that he lost them. So I'll give in and I will do a comparison between this one and other movie. So we are now probably about the halfway point through this movie. And in 1 hour of this movie, they have done more plot development, more character development, and character crossover, and just all-in-all camaraderie than what the remake did in the entire movie.
Here's one of the things that I actually really liked about Point Break, and that is everything in the plot comes from something else that happened in the plot before.
Yeah, it's a chain reaction.
Yes. So it is
another
really,
Keanu Reeves film.
It is...
Wow.
It is nice. Really, it is one of these movies that, like, they follow the detective work actually pretty darn well.
Yes.
They, like, the theory that they're surfers is based on actual evidence. It's not just like, oh, I look at these guys and I think, oh, these guys are completing the Ozaki Eights, because that makes sense and everybody knows about that.
Because reasons.
And,
always.
And then, going from there, it's like he gets in with these people, they gather information, he finds out like that certain chemical composition, and so they go around and they gather like hair samples from different surfers on different beaches to see like where each one was located at, and they narrow it down to this particular beach. It's like they use that information to get like with these, thing after another that leads them to the next clue in the movie.
And it's a good point too, like That gives a lot of credibility because, you don't just go to one beach and find one crew and that happens to be the crew. The part that we kind of skipped over earlier was that, they did the chemical composition test and figured out which beach they were, which break or beach or whatever they call it, that they were surfing. So nice detective work.
Yeah, and that glad you actually said that because that brings me to my next point of the usage of the movie title.
Point Break.
Yeah, because it got used correctly in this film, because when they discover which beach the chemical compositions are matched up at, Keanu Reeves goes, oh, that one. Nice Point Break. And that was definitely used in a much better context than the remake.
It's interesting that they come up with that from the title, given that you know what the first two were. Like, they come up with Point Break, which is not
that
really...
That was one of those things where in the 90s, you notice they did that. They took one aspect of whatever it happened to be and then converted that, into the title of the movie. So Point Break, like Terminal Velocity,
Demolition Man,
like it's even going. Well, I mean, like Speed, I guess. But I mean, like they take one little aspect of the overall thing and then turn it into the title for that.
Solid point.
So they didn't do that with Fast and Furious though later on.
And also, a lot of the guys that are not a lot of guys, but I'm sure that quite a few of the guys, at least a couple of them that were in Bodie's crew, are actual surfers. Surfers turned actors or you know, a little bit of both, but they're all like accomplished surfers. So
yes,
the term Point Break probably came out often.
Yes,
in filming.
What's next on the plot? I forgot.
Okay, so next on the plot is Pappas and Utah then stake out the bank that Utah saw them mm-hmm. go to and whatnot.
Give me two.
And
Give me two.
Yep, that's one of the most infamous lines from the movie. That's how Brian and I became really good friends. Because anytime we go to the fridge to get a refill, you always grab two. one for person going, one for person still in the living room. And before you know it, 30 cases gone in an hour.
Another, like when they're in the beginning, to jump back, Pappas is talking to Utah on the boardwalk there, the dock or whatever pier. And he says surfing is for little rubber people that don't shave yet. That's a line I still use to this day.
I use it
all the time. Until I just recently rewatched it, I had forgotten that that's where that came from.
So nice.
It was a nice reminder of where I've been using.
I can honestly say I don't really quote this movie, just because it's not like in my vernacular. But at the same time, the line that always sticks out with me though is like at the end when he's just like, Vaya con Dios.
Because, yeah.
Like, why not? Like, why not do it? Like,
well, yeah.
And then, what doesn't he say, like, you know, adios, muchacho, when he jumps out of the plane? And, like,
adios, amigos?
Or adios amigos.
Adios, amigos.
I don't know why I said muchacho. Oh, because okay, you know what? I know what I'm thinking of.
What are you thinking of?
The Ocho Man Behind the 8-Ball podcast here at Lineup Media. He starts every show with "Hola, muchachos, my friends."
Ah, well, there you go.
That's right.
So, we are in front of the bank, and
totally misses the cue to like.
Well, Pappas is a little hungry. He's reading his Calvin and Hobbes, and he sends Utah out to get some sandwiches, and
he wouldn't like had he just paid attention. I mean,
so yeah, this is
he wouldn't have needed to pull out his gun. He literally could have just walked over there. Popped the tires and walked away.
Yeah, if he simply is not hungry at this moment, Utah catches it. Because when he's reading his comics, Utah's paying attention. He's watching what's going on.
This is my one scene of the film that is negative points for me on you know, accountability and as well as kind of a character drop for both of them and everything like that. Because I mean, this is their like big break. I mean, they've been working this case now for weeks. And they're 99% sure that this is where they're going to be. This is what's going to happen. And it's like they could just it's almost as if they're just like staking out a house, waiting for somebody, to arrive or leave at a random point, and it doesn't even really matter. So he comes back to the car. They notice him run out of the bank with the money, and thus ensues the epic car and foot chase of the movie. Which was really well done, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Just because, it's for a 90s action film, it's very well done.
Yeah. Now, car scene was really neat. I love the foot scene, but the main thing that I love about the foot chase scene has to be the soundtrack for it, the music that goes along with it. It's, all instrumental and whatnot, and it's just... very intense. It kind of keeps you enthralled with it and everything. And obviously, very pivotal point of the film because Utah has now exposed himself to the group as an agent and everything like that. So his cover is blown no matter what. So you're kind of banking on him capturing at least one of them. That way, the bank robberies end.
Yes.
So.
And they kind of give you that right out of the bank. As soon as he's freeze FBI. You could just see, Reagan is Bodie, just kind of give him a look like, man,
deception.
Wow.
Heartbreak.
Well played.
Bromance is over, son. So Foot chase happens, and they end up down in what looks like a little viaduct area and whatnot.
Oh, that's the L.A. River.
Oh, the L.A. River. Okay.
Yes. If you didn't know that.
I did not know.
No, well, that's because it's that concrete. It's that big, like, stretch of concrete, like, river-esque type thing. That's the L.A. River.
Got it.
If you see that ever in a movie, that's what that is.
Okay.
Which has been used in so many movies.
Oh, I can imagine.
Like, just imagine the scene in Terminator 2.
Yeah.
When he's chasing him down, like, the truck and stuff like that. Even the closing scene for that one sci-fi movie, like, they're just walking through there, like, I mean, there's Grease, even the chase scene at, or the car, the driving
race.
Thing, the race at the end, that was filmed in the L.A. River.
Gone in 60 Seconds, probably.
Yep.
Same way.
Tons of love to shoot there because, well, one, nobody's allowed there.
Oh, so you don't have to worry about clearing crowds or anything.
And it's very easy to shoot it with nobody watching.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So this comes to one of the, what I would consider top five scenes of the whole movie. Still referenced in actually a lot of other movies.
Yep.
Most notably in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, of course, was poorly, 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 poorly recreated in the remake.
Yes. This is one of the best setups though for this entire thing is that Keanu or Utah is chasing after Bodhi or Reagan in the Reagan mask. He suspects that it's Bodhi. Like he doesn't have any definitive evidence though that it's Bodhi, but he's like okay, this very well could be my friend.
Right.
Chases him down. And then is in a situation where he can shoot him.
Right. Well, because he can't chase him anymore because when he fell, he hurts.
He hurts his knee.
Yeah, he re-injures his knee that you learned about previously.
Yes.
And,
he had him dead to rights. He could have easily shot him and killed him.
Well, because from the very first part of the film, he gets 100% on his shooting test.
Yep.
So you know for a fact that he is a marksman. And
as Cinema Sins actually brought up on their video, this was before he learned to shoot people in the leg via speed.
Ah, yes.
Just saying.
Shoot the hostage.
Before he learned that skill.
Yeah, yes. It's another mistake by Utah because had he not fired his gun, I don't think Pappas gets as close, like, you know, catches on to it because, you know, after this, Pappas is questioning him. How did you fire a whole clip and you hit nothing? And then, you know.
Yeah, when you fire, you don't miss.
Yeah, if he doesn't fire the gun, he kind of, you know, saves himself a little bit of trouble there. But
I kind of figured he was doing it for two reasons. One, he was shooting up into the air because he didn't want to shoot Bodhi. And two, he was doing it to actually kind of let Pappas know that he was over there because he was down with the leg injury and all of that. Like, that was kind of like my thought process behind it. But then I also think, oh my God, you're firing a handgun in the middle of a city.
Yeah.
Like, up into the air.
That was my original take, too, was that he was...
like, you know, he would have gotten like so fired for that.
Yeah. Oh, especially, not just for just one bullet, let alone the whole clip. So, Bodhi gets away.
Well, he never actually
He lets
says,
him get away.
He never actually says that he fired the gun in the air. I mean, he probably doesn't get fired, but, you know.
No, but somebody would be like, okay, and where did you fire? At that guy who was, like, 30 feet away from
exactly,
you?
Exactly,
and where
yeah.
did those bullets hit? Yeah. Because we can't find any
from
of them.
From the prone position, you're laying on the ground. I mean, I hurt like, my leg.
One CSI guy would have walked in there and looked at that and be like, where did you shoot?
Yeah, exactly.
Somewhere.
Sorry, bro. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Like, no, what would be even more hilarious, though, is that he fires up and then, like, you know, a minute later, he's there on the ground and bullets just.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Pappas walks up and one hits him in the head, you know, and he.
Oh, no, that'd be sad.
Oh, that'd be such a, like, a horrible cliche type thing, though, of just like.
That'd be really sad.
That would have been horrible. He lets him escape. He shoots his gun in the air, all that kind of stuff. And then this leads to, like, actually one of the other, like, craziness for the rest of the movie. But the one scene that kind of surprises me is that Tyler, after this, figures out who he is.
Yeah, she discovers his lies.
In very dramatic fashion.
And she doesn't shoot him, despite the fact that she has a gun to him. But, I mean, I...
Maybe she missed.
I'm just saying. But, yeah, it's one of those things where... He's like, no, it's like, I didn't lie to you. I lied to you a lot, but not about who I am. Except I lied exactly about who I was.
It was all BS until you found out. she's pointing a gun at him and she is
And
not.
He's just trying to backtrack on this. He's like, you can tell, like, no, I love you.
Yeah, she is absolutely not firing the gun in the air, by the way.
Yeah,
she's taking out pillows and comforters here. Does not... This is not a good look for Utah.
It's such a crazy sort of scene because it's like you see like the wheels turning in his head.
Well,
and
it
just like,
it jumps.
How
right,
can I? How can I salvage this?
It jumps right to it, like you know that scene starts with a gunshot. Like it's not like
the
gunshot. Like it's not like a slow. She walks in and looks at him, you know, real dramatically. No, it's
you gotta love
bang,
a good,
the scene starts.
You gotta love a good gun shadow trope in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's like against the wall.
This is a movie that does kind of jump around a lot, too, and it jumps right into that.
Yeah, and then
right
the
bang.
Best thing is that right after, it jumps into something completely different.
Exactly.
Because Bodhi and crew show up to take Johnny out on a big adventure.
Yes, knowing that he is an agent. But you're kind of left with this sense of, like, what's going to happen? Who's going to know what? Did they actually see him? Like, is his cover actually blown?
It's really well directed here because they don't give it away. Like, it's not even referenced.
Like,
that they met on the street before, they don't reference it. That you know it, but...
Bodhi knows that he's an FBI agent and all of that. Like, he understands it. But then he even explains to them, he's like, no, I know exactly how to get him. Which then leads to actually a really great setup, because he takes Utah out. They get into their plane and stuff like that, and then it leads to, hey, who packed my chute? Oh, I did. Don't you trust me? Here, fine, take mine. Like, no. And then they swap around to a couple of different ones, and you're just like, oh crap, they're gonna kill him by
throwing him
out of a plane like with a crappy chute, you know? It's like. But no, that's not the case.
This movie takes a really wicked turn, right?
Yeah.
You know, when at the start of this scene, this movie takes a pretty good turn.
And what's great, though, even though as serious as all is, they still were able to throw in the funny part. He goes, are we going to jump or jerk off?
Yeah. Yeah. So I will tell
like,
you this.
It's
kind of like he just accepted, like, I don't give a shit, like, which one you give me. One of you guys are going to kill me with a parachute, apparently.
So
just let me do it.
Here's kind of the funny thing. So you know movies that surround certain topics, right? You've got like Point Break with surfing and also skydiving. You got like Top Gun, which you know involving Miramar, you know the fighter training school or whatever. People who are in those situations that quote those lines are like if you are in Top Gun and you quote the movie Top Gun,
are you fined?
You are fined. But here's the thing. I know people who are into skydiving, and they quote this movie all the time.
Hmm.
I'm not kidding.
Wow, I did not know that.
Even to this day, like, I brought the movie up to one of my friends who skydives, and he immediately starts going through the routine of them yelling back and forth. It's like, no, it's like, you pull. Like, it's like, it. Me, I mean, like, it's absolutely hilarious. And, like, even when jumping out of the plane, like one of them is bound to yell, adios, amigo.
Now, a true testament to their skydiving film knowledge is if they quote Drop Zone. Because let me tell you how few people know about that movie.
So, yes, they go through their big drop out there, and then which leads to actually one of the most hilarious points and one of the most unbelievable points of the entire movie. Is when Patrick Swayze pulls his chute with like,
it's like 100 feet left. Or
yeah,
like
it was
that.
Like nothing.
No,
I was like, nope.
That's the next one.
No, well, he also pulls low in this one. Because they were going really
pulls low, but I mean,
like
the 1 second
he hits water,
that's the last jump.
He hits water, and it's like, you know, there's like 100 feet between him and water, and that chute deploys for like a quick second before actually hitting the ground, and it's just like. I once again have talked to my skydiving friends. They're like, no, you do that, you die. They're like, you don't slow down enough and you go splat.
Yeah.
And he's like, your hard limit is like 1,000 feet. He's like, if you don't pull within 1,000 feet, he's like, you're dead.
That's the one thing I never understood about skydiving. There's all these documented cases of people jumping out of planes, chutes not opening, and they live.
Yeah,
and
but
it's like
there's also a lot of other ones where they do not live.
We're not talking high percentage here, but I mean, it happens. Like it's crazy. Like,
you just say it. Like I mean, I know for a fact that somebody there was a dude in World War II who fell out of a plane and ended up surviving. But the reason why he survived was because he hit a slope on a mountain.
Exactly. Yeah, that guy has a pretty impressive resume if you get into what happened.
Yes.
No, I love Chuck. I love Chuck Norris.
What happened afterwards? Yeah. What happened afterwards? Wow, that guy is crazy.
So this is where the plot really takes a turn, though, for Point Break, because then it is revealed that Bodhi has kidnapped Tyler and is holding her hostage.
Yes.
And for Utah to save her, he needs to go off and, like, do this stuff with them, like rob a bank and that kind
of
crap.
He needs to be part of the last bank robbery.
Yes.
For them, because, and we were talking about this when we were watching the film again today for our 1,798th time. We figure that they have to do another bank heist because with the FBI now knowing more than likely, like, who they all are, when not, like, their cover is blown in the States. And that is why in this last, you know, bank robbery, they go for the vault to get a large sum of cash for them to go away to another country.
It's interesting because, like, when Utah first catches on to them, they put their stuff in a storage locker. They scouted the bank. They're getting the fast cash and they're getting on the road. They're getting gone. And then they, you know, now they're going to rob this other bank. And it seemed kind of weird to me at the time. But then I kind of think, okay, maybe, yeah, if their cover's blown, this doesn't play in L.A. no more. Like, you know, you have to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, bank robbery happens, and things go sideways really bad for a lot of people.
Yes.
It's because they brought Utah.
Everyone gets shot in some sort of fashion, some non-lethal, some very lethal.
Yep.
And one of their crew doesn't make it. A couple pedestrians die in the matter, one of them an undercover cop. And they leave Johnny there to take the fall since he helped with the bank robbery and he's on camera doing so to just get framed within everything. And then they escape yet again to go off to their plane and leave the country.
But again, the beginning of the end is they go to the vault.
Yeah.
Which we can only assume is because of what we alluded to, that they're busted here.
Yep. So, Utah is then arrested on the scene, and his boss is super pissed and, you know, being an a-hole again to him and everything like that. Pappas ain't having it. He's over it. Knocks his boss out after 22 years on the force. I guess you're allowed to punch your boss in the face just once. And Pappas gets him in the car, uncuffs him, and they go to try and capture them and save Tyler. So we end up at an airport out on the strip, and Utah confronts them and everything like that while they're loading up their private jet and everything. And things go sideways yet again. Another crew member gets lost, another one injured, and we unfortunately lose Pappas to some gunshot wounds in the back.
Multiple gunshot wounds.
Yes.
Because here's the best part about this one, though.
What?
Is the fact that that dude sneaks up on Pappas, fires a shotgun.
And misses.
Misses, then gets shot.
Twice.
Twice, and all of a sudden becomes a marksman.
Well, you know, it's that life-draining adrenaline. You have to make your last seconds count.
Literally, as we're rewatching this, you know, me and Dave are watching this, and he goes, you know, Pappas turns around, drills him, drills the other guy. And Dave goes, wow, Pappas is a pretty good shot, as the other guy gets up and hits him with the shotgun in the back. And I'm like, well, he's not that good. I mean, that guy lived after two.
Yes. So Pappas unfortunately gets shot in the back and does not survive. And Bodhi then takes good old Johnny Utah with him.
Yes.
And
puts him and his one surviving buddy on the plane.
Who's wounded.
Yep, wounded with two gunshots. And they fly off with the money and everything like that.
To Mexico.
And now comes another, the last kind of big pinnacle turning point of the film. Bodhi essentially brings him out to just kind of taunt him the whole way and escape with the money, and leaves him on the plane with no parachute, and says that, you know, basically he's just not going to get his man. You still don't know what's going to happen to Tyler, and Utah is left with no parachute and a revolver.
Yep.
And nothing but a choice. Do I stay on the plane, or do I go after him?
It's quite the revolver, though, isn't it?
That is a badass revolver. I mean,
this is a Dirty Harry type stuff here.
The funny thing, though, is that if you notice, that's actually a really crappy gun for using in any kind of a quick situation, because you can't just, like, pop the chamber out, you know, and then reload like that. A Dirty Harry's gun actually could do that. That's a Colt, like, single action army, I think is what they call that. And you literally have to, like, push each shell out of, like, it's got a little thing on the side, and you got to push each shell out the back.
Wow, what a horrible design.
Well, it's really stupid.
And I think that gun is, too, like, you know, everything that they talk about, what they do when they rob the banks, is scare tactics, you know.
It's a big, giant gun.
Big, giant gun, and you can even see it in the
Now
the
they just replaced
bank,
that with Desert Eagles.
The last bank robbery where Swayze actually has to kill the guy. He kills the undercover cop, and you see it in his face like he hadn't done that before.
Yeah.
So this is a guy who's not planning on really using this weapon.
Well, they even say
much.
That earlier on. They're like, they never kill anybody. Yeah. They never shoot anybody. It's like they control the room.
That's the point where, like, his mask comes off and he gets a little, and obviously somebody had just got shot as well. So
yeah,
it's a crazy moment for Swayze.
So Keanu Reeves jumps out of a perfectly good airplane
with no parachute.
With no parachute
and a hand cannon. But he's not going out without, you know, a try here. So,
something's going to happen one way or another.
Yeah. So he goes on out. He catches up to Bodhi and it just has a weird exchange of talking with him.
Yes. But what's cool about this scene, though, is that the television show Mythbusters proved this correct, that you can catch up to somebody.
Yes.
After they've jumped out of a plane before you.
Yep.
And
what they also proved is that you can't talk to each other.
The conversation is false, but the jump is real.
Every single conversation that happened while skydiving is not real.
Unless you're really good lip readers.
That's true.
It's totally possible if you're lip reading.
But I thought that was really neat that they, you know, those were some of the neater episodes, is when they did movie editions and they did Point Break and all the skydiving stuff. So
what would you say? He probably has 4 second lead.
4 or 5 second
lead.
4 or 5 seconds.
You know,
and Bodhi is obviously, he's going at just a regular pace with, you know, full spread. And Keanu was going down bullet style.
Yeah, he's John Wick style all the way. Yeah. Foreshadowing for a later day.
Catches up to him, awkward exchange, as Brian put it, and leads to an even lower opening as before, which definitely would have killed them.
Yeah,
because this was ground. This was not water that they landed in this time. And a little slow motion rolled down the hill sequence and whatnot. Utah messes up his knee again. The other guy, Roach, is found dead on the ground with his parachute out. But, of course, Bodhi's okay. Little dusty, little limp, but he's okay.
Utah broke his fall.
Yeah.
They're rolling out in the parachute, you know.
Yeah. You know, he's one radical son of a bitch like that.
The bromance ends with them parachute.
Either way, they land, they do their thing, they have their exchange, and Tyler gets released.
Yes.
And Bodhi escapes with the other dude.
Rosie.
Rosie.
Who, that actor is actually named Terry. That's not his actor's name, but he is actually one of the cameramen in Wayne's World.
There you go.
So he went from funny little Wayne's World character into badass Rosie.
Yes.
It's an interesting line here from Swayze, because he says, "I guess we both lose." And it's like you're in Mexico with a bag of cash you have to split with maybe one person, and you're gone. Utah's career is probably over. Like, you've won here, if you're Bodhi.
I think he's kind of talking about
the deaths and the
spiritual link that they shared and whatnot. Yeah. You know, I think referencing that and whatnot, that was seemed to be an important part in Brody's relationship with people was, you know, his spiritual connection, you know, as
which I think explains the last you know, quarter of the movie there when he could get away and he just decides to keep playing the spiritual game with Johnny.
Yep.
Yes. But Bodhi escapes and then they end up following him to Australia, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Bell's Beach.
50-year storm.
To be there for the 50-year storm, which causes the biggest waves in the world.
Which is referenced earlier in the movie. It's not a random occurrence.
Yes.
Bodhi's one of those ultimate ride kind of guys, and he references the 50-year storm as being the ultimate rush.
Yes. So he chases him down, and of course it's raining, and they proceed to have a little conversation about stuff, about how he tracked him down, and then they have themselves a little fight. And then in the middle of the fight, good old Utah handcuffs himself to Bodhi.
Yes.
And you're like, I'm taking you in.
Now, what's funny, though, Brian, he brought up a funny point, like a little alternate way that the conversation could have started. What was it again?
He walks up to Bodhi on the beach, and he throws the Reagan mask down, like at his feet. You know, that's how this conversation starts. And I thought, what if he walked up in the Reagan mask?
Like, what is going on here?
This conversation starts that way.
Like, just gets like directly in front of them wearing the mask.
Hand on the really clock. It's time to go, Bodhi.
You really want to freak him out? Get like two other dudes with you and wear the other ex-president masks. And not Reagan's mask.
So he could have shown up with FBI guys.
FBI guys in his other gang's masks, and just like freaked him out. And like, what's going on? It's like, I'm seeing my dead friends. And then it was I am an FBI agent. So Utah is forced to choose. Once again, between something crazy and the job that he's supposed to do. And this time, he, of course, chooses the crazy, and he lets Bodhi go, and Bodhi goes off into the ocean to die. Yeah.
To never
this
come
is
back.
This is their whole thing through the movie, is Bodhi has chances to eliminate Utah, doesn't do it. Utah has a chance to eliminate him away, doesn't do it. And
lets him go out and die.
And then enter said, you know, special Australian FBI agent, with his crazy thick accent and everything
that. Even worse than that, it wasn't real.
Oh, no, you can tell it wasn't.
That was like the fakest Australian accent I've ever heard.
Now, the guy
If I found out that dude was actually Australian, it'd be hilarious.
The guy
I don't think he was.
When Utah's walking to the beach and he passes his pedestrians, though, and he's talking about, you know, what's it like out there, and then one guy goes, you gotta be crazy to go out there, man. It's death on a stick.
I love it.
Just cracked us up when we heard that.
Death on a stick. That's so great.
So,
but that is the movie.
Yes.
Like, it's one of these things that's extremely campy, but it is extremely entertaining.
And it's well done campy. It's not like, it's actually like taken seriously to a pretty good degree. But, you know, the campiness comes in for, you know, a little bit of like just comedic relief in the film and whatnot, you know, just for the viewer's pleasure and everything. And I honestly think that the mixture of it was just enough of both through the majority of the film.
Yes.
You know, it's
just kind of the vibe you get from surfer like type people, like you know, they're just kind of, you know, bro and man. I think that's where people get some of the campiness. And even like some of the stuff I read said that, you know, Reeves' acting was not good. And I'm like, he's pretending to be a stoned guy that surfs.
But it's not very good even when he's not pretending to be that guy. That's the problem.
True.
But let's go ahead and get on to like some of the other aspects of this movie. Any idea, guys, on how much this movie cost to make?
Mm.
Wow,
91.
Oh.
25 million.
Ooh. What's your guess?
I'll go a little higher. 34.
You were both slightly over, but you were closest. It was $24 million.
Damn.
Now, the box office, though, guess how much it made?
Ooh. 87.
You said it was 22 was spent?
24 was spent.
It's got to be more than double. This had to do pretty good. Swayze at the time.
I said 87.
Swayze at the time. I'll go with a cool 75 at least.
83.5.
Yeah,
look at that.
Woo-hoo. You worked at Blockbuster. Get away from
that you did.
Blockbuster has nothing to do with box office. That just has to do with knowing like this stuff, actors and what the movie's about.
So, any idea who was supposed to play some of the characters in Point Break?
Utah is a subject of some discussion. I read everything from, Charlie Sheen, Johnny Depp,
Val Kilmer, and Matthew Broderick. Yep.
I did not read that.
Ferris Bueller.
Ridley Scott was originally the one that they wanted to get to direct.
Wow. Oh, that'd been a really,
that could have turned out different.
That would have been a dark film.
They were trying to find another director, and James Cameron was married to Catherine Bigelow, and so that's how, and she ended up getting the thing. Apparently, they offered the role to Willem Dafoe for Johnny Utah.
Well, that Pappas?
Yeah. Well, this
William
was,
Dafoe.
This was younger Willem Dafoe.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, true.
William Dafoe and Gary Busey. Wow.
Let's see.
That'd be a little bit too much craziness.
Here's one thing I actually thought was super interesting. Apparently, Patrick Swayze, two things. One, refused to have a body double for all of the surfing and did it himself, because he didn't feel it was necessary to have a stunt double. And two, was already into the skydiving scene at the time, and did actually 50 jumps. For this movie.
Yeah, I was talking to Dave about this earlier. Like, I read that, and then they, what I had originally read was he was into it heavy, and then when the movie started filming, they told him he couldn't do it anymore, and the agreement they made was the last one where he's, via Candias, bro, and he goes out the door, or adios, amigos, that's what he says. That was the jump they agreed to let him do. But then I read somewhere else that in his biography, he said that he had never skydived before this movie, so I don't know. It's kind of all over the place, but I like to believe Swayze's a guy who jumps out of planes. Yeah, it fits him to me.
So, there's a lot of really, really good.
And Utah, Keanu Reeves, by the way, not good at football. They had to use a stunt double for his football beach scenes.
Yes,
coach dropped him, I guess.
Weirdly enough, when he was in The Replacements, he also played an Ohio State quarterback.
I always wondered, like they had to, at least at some point reference, yeah, he was terrible in the football scenes. Okay, we're going to put him in The Replacements.
Yes.
As quarterback.
Why not? Let's see here, man. There's a ton of information about this movie.
One thing I like about doing this review is it's so cool to do a review like on a movie like this. 30 years later, nearly 30 years later. If we were reviewing this like a couple days after we saw it in theaters in 91, we probably have a little bit different perspective on it.
All right, here you go, David.
What?
How many times is the F word said in the movie?
87.
You were low on this one. It was actually 105.
Oh. Wow. I wish they would count the word shit. It seems like the word shit is said more than the F word in this movie. Like, that seems like a very common Utah term in this movie.
Oh, shit.
Like, he says it four times. Every time he says it, he has to repeat it. that effect.
Yes. Let's kind of go through the cast, I guess, a bit. We can hit some of the big ones. I mean, let's face it. If you don't know who Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves are, then you're kind of stupid. So here's the thing. Of course, Patrick Swayze died a few years ago due to cancer and stuff. So, I mean, he was honestly like just a great actor, and he is sorely missed these days. Keanu Reeves has been going strong since 1991 with hit after hit and a bunch of other crappy movies too. including Speed and the Matrix, and now John Wick, which is arguably his best action movie.
Yeah.
I mean, John Wick and the John Wick series has been phenomenal.
It's his Sistine Chapel.
It is just amazing. And then let's go ahead and move on to Gary Busey, though, because it's Gary Busey. Gary Busey is one of these dudes that is kind of like gone down in history now as being certifiably insane. And it kind of shows, because he's definitely just like gone off the deep end a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. You don't know what you're going to get when you sign this guy up.
But I will ask this. What is your favorite Gary Busey film?
Oh, shit. Oh, man. Wow. Depends on my mood, man. I mean, that's hard. I mean, he's a great bad guy. He plays a great bad guy. That's what I love him for. He's an excellent bad guy. You got him as Ty Moncrief and Drop Zone, or you got him as Mr. Joshua and Lethal Weapon.
He commits to his roles pretty well.
Commander Krill in Under Siege.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, or that. But man, you know, paired up with Tommy Lee
Jones.
But
for me, I'm gonna go with something nicer than that. I'm gonna pick the Buddy Holly story.
Wow.
Because that was his best performance, as far as I'm concerned. But Gary Busey actually has not made a movie since 2016 or done anything since 2016. So I don't know.
I guess he's
just fully retired.
Well, unfortunately, you know, he's not a spring chicken.
No.
So I'm sure, you know, it's getting a little bit harder to find good roles for him and whatnot.
Probably a bit much for today's moviegoers.
Oh, that's very true.
You have to have a certain acquired taste.
I will say this, though. Lori Petty, she bounced around to a bunch of different things, did a bunch of voiceover work and a couple of TV shows and stuff like that. But
recently
she has been on the show Orange is the New Black.
Yes.
And so, like, she did very well on that show.
Yeah. Because she plays a crazy person.
Yes.
And she definitely nails it, you know, pretty well with her little, characteristics and weird little quirks and everything.
Yeah.
Good actor. Excellent actor.
Yes. But just because we've also been talking for very long time, we're going to do one other cast member. We won't get into a lot of the other minor players. We're John C. McGinley.
Oh, okay.
Because John C. McGinley is one of these dudes. It's John C. McGinley. Like, this dude shows up on screen and you're just like, okay, what's this guy going to be like? Like, he is one of my all-time favorite, like, comedic actors. And even, weirdly enough, even in action movies, he's still very, very good.
I heard his new TV show's doing well.
You see, he's on Chicago PD.
Stand Against Evil.
Yep, another one. He did a bunch of other. Ground Floor was another show that he was on that I thought he was hilarious in.
Obviously, super well known for his boss role in Scrubs.
Yeah, and he was on Burn Notice for a good while there.
And then he had two small parts that I remember. He had a small cop part in the movie Seven with Brad Pitt.
Yep,
he was one of the SWAT people, and then he also was one of the mercenaries in The Rock.
Also, he was one of the Bobs on Office Space.
Oh, that he was,
which is one of my favorite roles for him,
because that's actually a little bit out of his regular realm as like tough guy or whatever like that. He's just this kind of little uppity, smiley.
An efficiency expert.
Yes.
If you go through his IMDb, there's a lot of stuff on there. You wouldn't. Massive amount of stuff. You would not peg like I tried to picture like it.
Yeah.
Stallone movie, Get Carter. I could not picture him in that movie.
All right.
Any Given Sunday.
All right. So now that we've gone through all of that, let's do our rankings here.
Okay.
And Brian, go ahead and do yours first since you're the guest.
Oh, I got to do it first.
Yeah.
Man, probably the best movie about bank robbing surfboarders ever. Also the only one. Unless you count that disaster from you reviewed last week.
No.
Did they even surf in that movie? I don't recall.
Yeah, remember that was number four.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was only the one thing that the number four.
Yeah.
Man, that's a tough one.
I've already forgotten it. I've already forgotten the movie.
I wish I could.
Originally, on driving over here today, I'm thinking, what's my number? And I was thinking 7.5. IMDb gives it a 7.2. I think I'm going to go a little higher. I like one-liners. And I like what this – I mean, we don't get Speed without this movie. Maybe not John Wick, you know,
You know what you
movie.
Don't get, though, with this movie? Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
You don't? Because the Fast and the Furious is basically a shot-for-shot remake of this movie, with the exception of it being cars as opposed to surfing.
Yeah. I'll give it an 8.
Okay.
I like it an 8.
David?
Yeah, I'll go with an 8.
All right.
I'm pretty solid with that.
I'm going to give this one a 7.
Okay.
Just because it's right in that range.
It's
an entertaining film, but it's still extremely campy. And it's still the 90s. So I was thinking about it, like, the most hilarious point of this entire movie that and, like, doesn't really seem to, mix with even the remake now. And that is, had something like this happened in today's environment, it literally would have been like, you know, oh, who are you? It's like, oh, I'm Johnny Utah, former quarterback, blah, blah, blah. My parents died in a car wreck. Why does your Facebook page say that your parents are alive in Columbus, Ohio then?
Right. Yeah.
Here was your dad posting about his garden last week. Like, literally, like, the entire undercover plot of this would have been completely destroyed, like, very, very quickly.
Well, and, you know, the remake, I'm surprised that that wasn't
and even
more
that,
of a thing.
Even that kind of irked me, because it was still just like, you're telling me that this super famous dude that everybody knows about, like, his friend that died, Jeff.
Jeff.
It's like his friend that died, like, you know, because they recorded the entire thing when it happened. It's like, you know, nobody's going to think, you know, hey, former YouTube adrenaline junkie, blah, 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 becomes FBI agent. Like, one stupid article somewhere in some way, shape, or form that pops up on a Google search.
The National Enquirer.
Like, it's just, I refuse to believe that nobody couldn't very easily search him up and find out what he's been doing.
Especially when they have a millionaire backing their activities and whatnot. Like,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I can track most people down right now, and I don't even have that many resources to do it. Like, I'm just saying.
I can see a 7 for it. I can see that. They really sell you in the beginning that everybody is so serious at their jobs. Like, you know, Utah's this marksman. These are bank robbers that don't mess around, and they spend the whole movie just kind of letting each other go.
Yeah. So we got 2 8s and a 7 for our rating here, which is vastly, vastly higher than the last Point Break. So, you know, we're just, yeah. It's so, just a much better film. I even messaged David when I was watching. I was like, man, this movie is so much better than Point Break, the new one. It's like, God. It's like watching them back to back, though. It reinforces that the new Point Break is just such a load of crap.
I just give them a little bit of points, you know, for this movie. It's almost like Die Hard. You know, they stick Bruce Willis in there, and he's nobody at the time.
All right, gentlemen, I think that's all we got for this episode.
There's nothing more to cover. We made sure to point out the superior points of the film as opposed to the remake. Not hard to do. And a very lengthy list, but definitely needed to be talked about. Because, you know, when you bomb it that hard, you have to follow it up with the original.
All right. But be sure to check us out on all of our social media sites. Interact with us if you choose to do so. We would greatly appreciate it. Maybe you have a suggestion for a movie we should review. I don't know. But let us know. You can find us on Facebook and I believe Twitter. And you can message the site directly. You can just click on a little email thing there and send us stuff. We will get all that information. But please like and share. Get other people to listen to this show, because that's the only way we're going to grow the community of
Absolutely. People
who grab popcorn. But I have been your host, Brian Crock, and along with me has been David Kalisa and Brian Amos.
Thanks for having me.
I was right.
Guys.
I got your last name right.
Yes, actually, yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was great.
No, yeah, it was great having you on, man.
Yeah, definitely awesome. Anything 81 to 99, I'm happy to do.
81 to 99.
I'll go in that range. That's excellent. Good time.
All right, folks. Go out, enjoy this movie, because I know that we did. And then if you want to really, really laugh and cry, watch the remake of Point Break right after.
No, God, but, please, no.
Either way, grab your popcorn.